We're continuing the story of Jesus and who he is, what he was, what he is to us now. So I wonder if you were asked to give a testimony. People, like when they're baptized, had a baptism recently at Winscombe, and one of the challenges for her was to put together some kind of testimony of what God has been doing, what God has done, what God will do in her life. So what is the story of your life? How do you get to be in this church, at this place, at this time? What has brought you here? Now, lots of us will have lots of different answers to that. We'll have our own unique testimony. There'll be some crossover, I'm sure, but it will be very interesting and encouraging to hear that. And in a sense, this man's testimony is what we're reading today. I was blind, but now I see. So disability, I think it's been amazing. I'm 60 odd years of age, and disability and the attitudes to it has changed enormously in my lifetime in the UK. People kind of openly support those with disability. We watch every 4 years, which will be on quite soon, the Paralympics. And it seems like the hardline attitudes against those with disability sometimes have greatly softened. And it seems also that hardline attitudes against Christianity are softening. I talked recently about the change of attitude by Richard Dawkins, probably the main evangelical atheist, and the testimony of one of his friends who became a Christian because she felt that she was spiritually bankrupt. So there's a lot more tolerance around being a Christian. And I had 3 years study at Bristol Baptist College, and part of that was to be invited as a group to visit Christian projects in Calcutta. And one of the things that really challenged me about that time was the blackness, I felt, of the Hindu religion. I've always seen Christianity as the way, as the principal way, but I've tended towards the view that all religions give a degree of comfort to their adherents. I just couldn't see that in Hinduism. Seems to be a very superstitious religion, gods who behave badly, no real concrete promises for future happiness, and the idea, the philosophy that suffering has to be accepted. So if you're born onto a street or in a slum, you're a member of the Dalit caste, that's the untouchables, then hard luck, accept your lot. It is what it is. Most of the aid, most of the support that's given in Calcutta, in my time there at least, was given by Christians, by the tiny percentage that said that they followed Jesus. So why is that? Well, Christians believe that we are all human. We have all been made in the image of God, and we have choices. Now, a few years ago, next slide, please. One day I'll get this to work. It's a personal ambition. Anybody know who this is? Thank you very much. So Glenn Hoddle, great footballer, really. If you go back and watch the YouTube clips of him when football was a crazy game with very muddy pitches and all sorts of ups and downs, he played delightful football. And then he became a manager, and he became manager of England. And he was doing quite well, but then he was sacked when it was discovered that he believed that people who were disabled in this life were being punished for what they had done in a previous life. Seems very strange now, doesn't it, to feel that anybody had that kind of belief. Society can still be disturbed and frightened by the sight of handicaps. Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but when David Cameron, who was Prime Minister, his disabled son died at an early age, Parliament stopped to mourn his passing. So I think for us, first of all, the reminder that those who are weak amongst us still have the power to change our view and to transform us if we are ready. They can change our view. They can become Jesus for us. Next slide, please. So this is the man's testimony. I know this. I was blind and now I can see. So Jesus frees this man not just from the bonds of blindness, of guilt, of shame, but also the shackles of a man-made religion. He could see physically, mentally, and spiritually. So there is this man. He's never known anything else but blindness. He's never been able to comprehend colours or the faces of people. He'd always been rejected by his parents, who had rejected him because otherwise they'd have to accept the fact, according to their religion, that they had sinned and their son's blindness was God's punishment on them. And it tells us that in the Old Testament. So we had a dear lady in my previous church, Mary, and she was a great poet. She'd grown up in a mining village in Welsh, so she had this wonderful Welsh lilt to her voice, and she would just recite poems off the top of her head, which are beautiful. But one of the big issues she had was she was really felt very guilty that something that she had done might have affected her children's or her grandchildren's life. And she would quote this passage in Exodus to me. So next slide, please. The bottom one didn't come out well, did it? That's trouble when you use different colour fonts, David. So the top passage says, I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. So that's the passage where where God gives the Ten Commandments, and people quote that. So they say, you know, it's intergeneration. You go back and you're affected by what your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents have done. We had a question this morning from our son Tom, and he was wondering how Scottish our grandson was, because Fee's nan was entirely Scottish. So he was trying to work out how that worked down the generations. And we reckon that our grandson is about 10% Scottish. So we're affected, you know, genetically we're affected, aren't we, by what has happened before us and how people have got ill or whatever. So that's one passage, and she was quite right to quote that to me. But chronologically, much later in Ezekiel, that's the hiding passage, it says, can you read it better? Oh yeah, so at the front it says, the one who sins is the one who will die. The child will not share the guilt of the parent, nor will the parent share the guilt of the child. So you live or fall by your sinfulness or by your own individual commitments. That seems a lot more sensible, a lot more righteous, a lot more justice to me. So we stand or fall on what we do or we don't do, on our belief in Jesus or in our turning away from him. One of the strange things to me, one of the interesting things, is that most religions, you're born into them, aren't you? You're born to be a Muslim, you're born to be a Hindu, you're born to be this and that. But Christianity, you have to make a choice. You can grow into you can be born into a Christian family, but at some point in your life, you have to make that decision, I want to follow Jesus. You don't automatically become a Christian just because you're born into a Christian home. So this man had been rejected as he got older by society because they couldn't give any solutions for his blindness. And some of them wondered why their God couldn't heal these sicknesses. Next slide, please. So this is one of the prophecies in Isaiah about what the Messiah would do when he came. So there was this expectation. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. So this is the promise that when the Messiah comes, he would be able to do these things, to be able to demonstrate that he was the Messiah. The eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. So what will happen? So from the blind man's point of view, this was a good day for begging. It was a feast, Sabbath day in Jerusalem. And suddenly a man put some kind of muddy substance on his eyes. Interesting that, isn't it? That Jesus actually used materials to bring healing to this person. But for the man, it was that sense of being touched physically. Nobody touched him anymore. It was like he was a leper, because they were confused about what had caused his blindness. And with a voice of authority, this man said, "Go and wash the mud off your eyes in the pool of Siloam." And Siloam was a walk of about a mile away. So most of us can walk a mile. We may struggle with that, but we can walk a mile. But this man is still blind. He's still at least half blind. So he's got to stagger there and find this pool and then wash his eyes in the pool of Siloam. But there was a strange, hopeful feeling in this man's heart. He poured water on his eyes, and as the mud mixed with Jesus' spit fell off, he began to see pictures, colours, people, and also a sense that his life was just beginning. That grew in the man's heart. And then, who is this man? Who is this person that can do these things? So, the Jews had this lovely philosophy. The disciples, the Pharisees, the man's parents all believed that someone was to blame for this man's disability. And Jesus doesn't get into a discussion about this, as Fee read, because the man's blindness was an opportunity for God to be glorified and for that person to be transformed. So remember, we go back, John 1, right at the beginning of time, a prologue to John's Gospel. God creates the world, there's light comes, and it has been good. And then humans rebel, and it falls. The light has come again. Who knows what life was like before Jesus' time? We read a lot about exorcisms that Jesus did. Maybe it was a very dark place when Jesus came into it. But Jesus brought light, brought healing, brought restoration of God's creation, and brought in the statement, God's kingdom is amongst you. In a way, all of us who believe in the Lord Jesus are already in God's kingdom. God's kingdom is already here. We've got the outworking of it still to come. So Jesus was the new covenant superseding the law. The law condemned, the conscience blamed, but one greater than both is here, and he brought spiritual life and forgiveness to the blind man. Maybe this is for you this morning. This is your call to return. Maybe for a walk of less than a mile. I remember going to those Billy Graham crusades, and I hesitate to talk about them because they're often treated with great nostalgia by Christians. But I went as an 11-year-old child. A big group of us went, and I remember sitting there, I think it was Wembley Arena, and just watching at the end of what I thought was a very average service with an average sermon, watching hundreds and thousands of people walking to the front to be come into the kingdom, to get to know Jesus. So maybe our walk is for less than a mile, but we're to show signs that we want to follow Jesus. So we've all sinned. Suffering in a general way is always connected to sin, but suffering too is an opportunity for God's grace. We always need to trust in God's goodness so that we will find comfort in him, if not in the life that we're struggling with. Now, you've got to be really careful here. Notice some reasons why people suffer. Okay, so this is in no way, absolutely no way, an exhaustible list. But firstly, to prove or to test faith. So many people say to me, I was a Christian, I believed in Jesus, but it didn't really become real to me until I struggled in life in some way or other. Secondly, to improve us. So the deeper we go into God, the more suffering we see as a meaning, as having meaning and as having a point that we are there to draw near to God. Thirdly, as punishment for sin. If you drink a bottle of whiskey every day, then at some point that's going to affect you. Fourthly, to reveal God's glory. So here was the case in point where the healing of the man was to glorify God. And then fifthly, because of witnessing to Jesus Christ. That may not be so common in this country, but in many countries in the world, that is quite a regular thing that people suffer. So if we can remind ourselves that when we're suffering, we can be assured that God is in control. Mark 1 verse 12, it says, Jesus was tempted by the devil in the wilderness, but he'd been sent there by the Holy Spirit. God was still in control, even of that tempting time. So we meet lots of people with fears in this chapter that Fee read. Fears of people with disabilities, fears of being thrown out of the synagogue, fears of having their standard of living altered. Maybe that's really challenging us today. Do you fear having your standard of living altered? And most poisonously of all, fear of having any threat to their religion. The Pharisees were wicked because they not only didn't choose the way of Jesus themselves, but they tried to stop those who had chosen to go that way. They were really the blind ones because they had hardened their hearts so fully that they no longer respond to God. And these were the equivalent of church leaders. Pulls me up short. Maybe you think, oh, I've been a Christian X number of years. Many, many years I've been a Christian. Are you still listening, hearing, working through the voice of God in your heart? What is he saying to you? I believe that God says things to us all the time, but we only just hear a tiny, tiny percentage. Maybe when we're in church, maybe when we're having quiet time, maybe when we're driving the car. Seems to me most of the time for me that it's when I'm in the middle of sleep in the 3 o'clock in the morning that God speaks to me and wakes up and tells me things. So without Jesus, this man would have stayed blind and untransformed all of his life. It just took a couple of hours to be changed. And for us, it may take place in an instant, or it may take place over a period of years. The blind man's act of faith was a mile long, but yet other people's can be a lot longer. How long is Jesus calling you to walk for him? We may have great sadness and compassion for those suffering with a chronic disability, but we should remember that there are illnesses with which people suffer which aren't easily labelled or discernible. We think we live in a lovely village, everybody is happy because they've paid a premium to live in Rington. And yet we know, don't we, that there are illnesses within this village that go unnoticed. Mother Teresa visited many countries towards the end of her life. She never saw anywhere else the abject poverty that she'd seen in Calcutta, but she became aware that there are other poverties. Next slide, please, Nicola. So she said, we think sometimes that poverty is only being hungry, naked, and homeless. The poverty of being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for is the greatest poverty. We must start in our own homes to remedy this kind of poverty. Do you have a neighbour that you don't see from week to week because they're stuck in their house? How must that feel to never see another person, to never see a human being from one day to the next? So we are called to take on someone else's pain, whatever it is. That is the walk of Jesus. Jesus totally identified with our pain, and that led him eventually to the cross, which brought our resurrection and our hope. So we're called at times to become Jesus to the sufferer, and they then become Jesus to us. We open the door to transformation for the blind person, for the person with disability, but also for ourselves. Next slide, please. So when Jesus came, everything changed. Are you willing to follow the light of the world? Where will it lead you? I do not promise you that it will lead you to everything being good all the time, to some kind of superficial happiness, but it will bring you great joy and peace. Next slide, please. Jesus said, come, follow me. And wherever his path leads us, we are called to follow him. I think that I'm just beginning to understand that I need to give all of myself with no conditions to him. How about you? What is God calling you to do? To be? Where to live?
Amen.